Now, here's Jack Patty.
Good morning and welcome into the 9 to 10 hour. This is a Forensic Friday, so this is American DA Live with Ray Larson. And we're brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscaper's Corner has Triple Crown grass seed, the best seed for our area, available in 5, 25, and 50-pound bags. Call 225-9433. Our question of the day is brought to you by United Structural Systems, a professional foundation repair and waterproofing company in business for over 20 years. iFixFoundations.com, 859-254-7700. A Colorado school district wants more emphasis on patriotism and less on individuality in history classes. Do you agree? You tell us at WVLKAM.com. Tune in for the results with Cruiser and Crew between noon and 3. Yesterday, our question was, what do you consider to be the biggest issue in this year's election? 46% of you said the economy. 23% said immigration. Terrorism was 12%. So was Obamacare. Crime, 4%. And other, 3%. Are you surprised by that crime thing, Ray?
No. No. And I'll tell you why. Lexington is a pretty safe city. Now the media is pretty much emphasizes weather and crime. And so when people pay attention to the media, then they get crime, and and it would cause people to think that's all that's going on in this town, but it's a pretty safe city. Now, we don't like this random shooting that's going on, but we believe that we and the police believe that that's a small group of young thugs that are doing it, and sooner or later they'll be caught. And then all of a sudden, a lot of the shooting just goes away.
Now, I know this doesn't involve you or your office at all, but I want to get your comment before we get into the show today about the four UK football players and what they've been charged with. I know that's an offense that's a misdemeanor, and it's going to be handled through the Fayette County
County Attorney's Office.
But tell us about this charge and what it means.
Well, apparently it's disorderly conduct in the second degree, and it's a Class B misdemeanor, the maximum penalty for which is either up to a $250 fine or up to 90 days in the detention center. My guess, and it's also eligible for a diversion.
What's that mean?
Well, what happens is that you get into a diversion program, and if you complete a significant number of community service hours and so forth, then the whole thing goes away.
I see.
Yeah.
Won't even stay on your record.
That's right.
All right. Tell us what we're talking about today.
Well, this is I said earlier that when we watch TV sometimes, we see the thing that says technical difficulties. And this is a murder case that occurred in September of 2012. A guy named Malik Johnson went to his ex-girlfriend's house, and there was the 16-year-old girl who was there with her current boyfriend and her child. This guy that was with her at that Winburn Drive address thought this baby was his, and it turns out it wasn't. It was the guy that came over to confront him, and the guy that came over to confront him, Malik Johnson, shot and killed Jaleel Raglan. And then handed the gun off to one of his friends, told him to get rid of it. We get ready to go to trial. We have the guy subpoenaed. He says, I'm not testifying. I have a Fifth Amendment right not to incriminate myself. And so we'll talk about how that happened.
Okay.
Katie Webster was the prosecutor in the case.
Good morning, Katie.
Good morning.
And she's been a regular lately.
She is? Yeah. She's been a real regular.
And Mary Hoover.
And all dressed up, I might add, too. And looks really nice
for
radio. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah. Give me a break. And then we have the interpreter for us all. That's Mary Houlihan, who speaks in regular language and sort of interprets what we say for everybody out there. And Mary is the victim's head of our victims' advocacy operation.
Morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Glad to have you back.
Okay, Katie, do a better job of the facts than I did.
Well, you did pretty well. So this happened on September 25th of 2012. The victim in this case was Jaleel Raglan. He was 16 years old at the time that he was shot and killed, and the defendant was Malik Johnson, and he was 19 years old when this happened. They had dated a girl in common. And just from that relationship between
them. Now, that sounds weird.
It sounds
weird. They both had dated this girl.
They both had dated this girl, and on and off. And through that, they had developed some kind of beef with one another, I guess you would say. And on this particular day, the victim and his girlfriend were going to the girlfriend's apartment. They saw Malik Johnson's cousin, whose name is Marquez Shelby. And Marquez Shelby told Malik Johnson that there had been some talk about what the victim was going to do to Malik Johnson. That was never really substantiated. But
okay, now wait a minute. Now see, that automatically begins the process of it. So is there potential self-defense? Because the guy said he was going to do something, right?
That's what the cousin reported, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the defendant said through his own statement. So the defendant leaves his job at McDonald's. He gets a gun, and he goes to the girlfriend's apartment, where he meets up with the victim, Jaleel, and he shoots him in the back and shoots him in the forehead, kills him.
What?
Did the police get him right away, or what happened there?
Well, the girlfriend was able to say that she had seen Marquez Shelby earlier. They had had a confrontation. The police went and talked to Marquez Shelby, and Marquez told him that he and Malik Johnson, the murderer, had been at the apartment. So they were able to get him pretty quick, because after that they followed up with Malik Johnson and he confessed.
Okay, so Marquez Shelby was with Malik Johnson.
Right.
Okay, so tell us about what transpired at the scene
that causes
Marquez Johnson to become the main point of what this show is about.
Well, what happens at the scene is, through the defendant's confession, we knew that Marquez Shelby had stood outside while Malik Johnson went in and shot Jaleel. And afterwards, we find out that Malik had handed the gun to Marquez Shelby to get rid of, which he did. He took it back to their grandparents' house and hid it under the couch.
Okay, so you try Malik Johnson.
Right.
And one of the witnesses in the case is Marquez Shelby, right?
Well, it was intended to
okay,
be.
Okay, well, just talk about that. Had you talked to him prior to getting ready to go to trial?
We had talked to him several times prior to going to trial, and he wasn't charged with anything initially because we knew that Malik Johnson was going to try to point the finger to Marquez and say that Marquez Shelby was actually the shooter. So on the day of trial, when he's supposed to testify, he comes to the courthouse, he's subpoenaed, he's supposed to take the stand, and he claims a Fifth Amendment right not to testify.
And he does have that right?
Well, what happens then? If you think about it, if this guy was given the gun to get rid of, that falls into the statute called tampering with physical evidence, meaning trying to dispose of a weapon or make it unavailable at a official proceeding, a trial. So he did, but the minute he said, "I'm not testifying because I have a Fifth Amendment right not to incriminate myself," that sets off a series of events involving the judge. And why don't you tell us about that?
Well, we had a hearing to determine whether or not he actually had a Fifth Amendment privilege, and he did. He would have said something that would have incriminated himself. So the judge excused him from the trial, and what happened from then on is exactly what we thought would happen. The defendant, Malik Johnson, tried to point the finger at Marquez Shelby and say that Marquez was actually the shooter.
All right, let's take a break at this point. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. me toll-free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. 25 minutes after 9 o'clock, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll-free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. When we do these cases, it's always interesting that inevitably there's something that comes up that has something to do with red tape that throws a roadblock between you and getting the job done, and this is an example of that.
It's called constitutional rights.
Yep.
Yeah. The well, did you, Katie? Did you have any idea that this guy was gonna balk and not testify before the trial?
Well, there was always that little thought in the back of my head that he might, but up until the trial, he was extremely cooperative. He was extremely polite. He was always willing to talk with us and to talk with investigators. But I knew that the fact that he was the defendant's cousin, he was getting some threats a lot from people about being a snitch. I thought that that might wind up being a problem.
Okay. So when he did that, and it caused there to be a hearing, mm-hmm. And that sort of thing. The family of the dead guy was sitting in the courtroom, and Mary is, you know, they don't understand any of this. And so talk to us a little bit about what's going on with the family while all of a sudden we're up there playing legal issues.
Well, like so much of the law, when your child has been murdered, it's just not going to make sense. The defendant's having all the rights and the victim not being the one with rights is already, you know, an insult. But then when you finally made it through the years it takes to get to trial, and then you're in the midst of the emotional reaction to seeing things like autopsy photos and how your child was killed when they were really just trying to do the right thing and visit this baby they believe to be their own, it's just insult to injury and revictimization on such a huge level. But when it looks like the defendant or the person that they had wished was also charged with murder, you know, understandably just for their role in it, but that's just not the way the law works, then to
you mean the parents of the dead man thought that the guy that got rid of the gun should be charged with murder too.
Yeah, you know, you're dealing with grief, you're dealing with child loss, you're dealing with so much, so of course they want everybody to be held accountable for what occurred. The complication comes from you don't charge two people with murder and then give the jury the reasonable doubt of who really did it. So playing and you know, they were this child's family, you know, just wonderful people, as understanding as they can be, but it's a lot of time describing these things that just seem so very unfair. So one of the reasons to talk to them the whole time was that, you know, he's working with us, we're hopeful of his testimony to be of assistance during this, and then he goes to get on the stand and says, I'm not talking, and it looks like that works for him. I mean, to them, you know, initially he was held while they had this hearing, and then right in front of him, he gets released, and there's not charges against him at that point. And that just feels incredibly unfair. And, you know, here I am as the victim advocate trying to describe law, and, oh, well, they can make him testify, they can talk to him, because this is what I've seen before. But it just was complicated by the law in the judge's decision, and it, you know, it's all understandable when it gets explained to you, but not when I haven't lost my child.
Yeah.
And but this family has been remarkable. You know, Jaleel's mother in particular, she was the one that, you know, when her child believed he had gotten a young girl pregnant, she stepped him right up and was part of why he did all the right things with trying to visit that child even before paternity was established. She assisted that young girl in many ways and helped care for that the baby from the very start. The baby had stayed with them. And so after this murder, she not only loses her 16-year-old child, but she actually soon after lost rights to what she believed to be her grandchild, because DNA testing after the murder ended up proving that the infant involved was actually the shooters, not the victims. Mm.
Wow, that's devastating.
It's absolutely devastating.
Okay, we'll take this opportunity to take a break here. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. We'll take a break, get an update from the Information Center. Be right back. It's 9:37, 23 minutes before 10 o'clock. As American DI Live continues, and Charles is on the line. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing well. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I am the father of Jaleel Ragland.
Yes, sir.
And his mother is on the line as well.
Good morning.
Tammy Addis.
Good morning.
And this is Charles Ragland. We are a bit distraught about this whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Here and how it was presented. I'm just now seeing this morning the webpage of this, and I'm a bit upset that this is put on like a production. This is not a production. This was a loss of a life. This was a loss of my son. And then the other slap in the face on there is for my son to be referred to as the dead guy. On this live radio, his name is Jaleel Ragland.
And we would prefer that you use his name and not just a dead guy, because we're still trying to deal with this whole issue. And, you know, for you to just keep saying the dead guy, the dead guy. No, that was my son, and he had a name. Please use it.
Okay, well, I apologize for that. And you're right. And this is a great example of how victims of crime never get over it.
Oh, no.
And it's
how could you?
And it's time helps, but they have a hole in their heart that will never be filled. Mm-hmm. And so I apologize for referring to your son as the dead guy, and I won't do it again. But thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now, so what happens with the Marquise? So after what happened with Malik?
Well, what happened? Like I said,
because that trial went on.
That trial went on without Marquise, and we had the confession from Malik saying that he had killed Jaleel,
mm-hmm.
and Malik had also left his McDonald's shirt with his name tag on it at the scene of the crime. So he was convicted by the jury. He was sentenced, and he was sentenced to 25 years to serve. So he's in the penitentiary now. He'll be eligible for parole in 2032. As far as Marquez was concerned.
Okay, so Marquez says that he wanted to claim his Fifth Amendment right as he can.
Right.
And the judge properly said that you have a right to remain silent because
right.
you could, in fact, be charged. And so what happened after the trial, they sentenced this Malik Johnson to 25 years. And I'll guarantee you that Jaleel's parents, just like most parents, think that's ridiculously low and that sort of thing. And we don't necessarily disagree with that, but it's the jury's decision to make whether we like it or we don't like it. So, Mary, how are you dealing with that with the family?
Well, you know, you can hear from having just heard from Tammy and Charles the kind of pain that you go through with the loss of the child. It does never end, and it is also true that from the very start, there's never going to be anything that feels like justice, because justice would mean that they have their precious son back.
Right.
And there was, you know, so much family and family support and people that cared for Jaleel that involved themselves in this process. But one of the things that most impressed me in the midst of all the grief that the family was going through, there wasn't a court proceeding that occurred that Jaleel's mother didn't attend. And that's, you know, that sounds like a little thing, but it means that you're sitting through, you know, 3 and 4 and 5 hour dockets just to hear that the case is going to be put back on for the following month and that kind of thing.
Right.
That means as a family that you're told, and, you know, that I work with them, but I have to tell them things like, while you're in this trial, you can't cry or have an emotional reaction to the things you see and hear. And if you feel that coming on, work with me on it, and let's get you out of the courtroom. But that's insane. Let's hear about the death of your son. And don't you be emotional about it, right?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
But they handled everything with remarkable poise and grace. And just like you just heard, yes, they're offended at things they can't control, but all of it is in memory of their precious son.
We're going to take our break. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. Ray?
You know, Jack, I was really touched by the telephone call from Charles and Tammy about their son. And I just, as they were talking, my mind just went back about Don Turpin and Maggie Winstanley, the mother of Michael Turpin, and Doug Elam and his the mother of his son.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been 30 years since Michael Turpin was killed. And if you talk to Don, he'll start crying today.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, I guess you never get over it. And one of the things that I need to reiterate, that we've been doing this show for about 10 and a half years. And it seems to me that the goal of this show is to raise issues and explain a lot of what goes on in the criminal justice system and the court system.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, kind of stand up for crime victims and how they're getting kind of the short end of the stick and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm glad Charles and Tammy called, because that kind of refocused us on the loss, and they were very emotional about it, just like Don and just like Doug and just like so many of the family members that we've had on this show. And so and we continue to stay in touch.
I was going to ask, you do stay in touch?
Yes. Yeah. Mary, give us kind of an idea about the victim services operation in our office. How do we deal with people over the years that have had these kind of serious losses?
Well, actually, to me, it's more how the victims themselves deal with it in regard to, you know, sometimes at the end of this lengthy court process, the entire process and the bad news that comes with it and the feeling that you didn't get justice can kind of exhaust families and make them not want to have anything to do with even the things that they were most angry about or most want to change. And then some families, like Jaleel's family, involved themselves in trying to change the things that they ran into that were disappointing to them about the response of the criminal justice system. And this is, you know, you can kind of tell from them calling in. They've been right on it on every step of the way, representing their son in every way to the best of their ability, to try and give him a voice in this process, because the criminal justice system doesn't have much to do with the victim's voice.
Let me give you a great example of that, Jack. When it's time for sentencing of a defendant,
mm-hmm.
under Kentucky law, the defendant has an opportunity to address the judge by law. Victims are not allowed by law to address the judge, or family members of victims. They can write of what we call a victim impact statement, but they don't have a right
to face them face to face.
That's right. Yeah. You've seen on television.
You see it on TV all the time. Yeah.
Right. Well, in Kentucky, they don't have that right, and we think that's some judges allow it to happen. But
it's up to the discretion of the judge.
You have to ask for permission to do it, and some judges do. A lot of judges don't, and it's frustrating to these families to sit there and watch a defendant basically beg for mercy from the judge, and the victim's family can't do it.
Yeah.
See, so it's very frustrating, and this is the kind of thing Mary talks about when she says the rights are all in favor of the defendant, not in the favor of the victims.
Yeah, and we've had enough victims on this program as guests on the show to for me to have learned that a word that they hate is closure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Easy thing to say, but there is no such thing, is there?
There's no such thing. One of the things I try and prepare families for is that when they get that verdict, those next days are going to be real hard, because even though we've been sticking our fingers in their wounds, there's been that thing that keeps them feeling like the representation of their child or loved one is alive. And then at the close of the case, you kind of re-enter that grief.
Thank you guys very much. Stand by. We have an update from ABC. If you're listening to WVLK AM, stay with us for Live with Lee. If you're listening to 101.5 FM, The Coach's Show with Joe B. and Denny. Hope you have a great weekend. I will be back Monday morning at 6, 5 Central.